from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ronji on The Score.
Why is it important to have a WBC and for you in particular to participate in that?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, you don't want to see that. Everyone's an amazing player, but it's a big loss for the Mets. But when you look at what this is all about and all that, I don't think he would tell you that he regrets being a part of this. We like to compete. We like to compete for our countries, people that we, you know, care about and things like that. You never want to get hurt. I mean, people get hurt in spring training games every day right now, and no one says we shouldn't have spring training. So that's the unfortunate part of the game. People will get hurt, but the beauty of the game is to see the fans, see the passion the players have this time of year, especially in these events. And that's what the game, that's why you play the game. So you're telling guys not to play the game they love for the country they love is tough, because you can get hurt walking down the street, to be honest. So it's unfortunate, but I think that you see the, you know, the bigger picture of this, people playing for the countries and having a great time. You know, sometimes things happen, unfortunately.
That is White Sox starter Lance Lynn speaking from inside a huge barrel and talking about the injury to Mets closer Edwin Diaz, who is probably done for the regular season. He injured his knee in the middle of a celebration earlier in the week at the World Baseball Classic. Again, Diaz is telling people close to him that he's going to try to be back and for before the end of the regular season. That may be a little optimistic for him, and hopefully he does return. You hate to see anybody lose a season, especially in a like that, celebrating a big win for your country, but that's the outcome. That's what happened to him, and wishing him the best. Last night in the game, Jose Altuve in the game for Venezuela was hit by a pitch from Daniel Bard, who was having difficulty finding the strike zone, to say the least. And it looks like the Venezuelan doctors believe he has a broken thumb. The Astros want to check him out for themselves. Maybe we'll get an update this morning before this show is over at 12. I don't know if we will, but the very great likelihood is that Altuve is going to miss some time now with that broken thumb. This is Hit and Run on The Score. The number 312-644-6767 is the phone number, this text message. And by the way, we welcome your text to the text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. This is from Midway Jimbo, who says the WBC is great for baseball, not ideal for MLB. And I would argue growing the game internationally and locally in a fun way is more important to the longevity of the sport. And you know, that is a fantastic way to look at it. This is truly a great event for Major League Baseball as it's seen around the world. We know that the sport is popular in other countries, certainly in Latin America, definitely in Japan, in Korea, in Taiwan. There is a lot of interest around the world, and this event only serves to make that interest even greater, which is totally true. It does maybe come at the expense of Major League Baseball and the regular season in which the World Baseball Classic is played. It's clearly going to cost Altuve a bit. It's going to cost the Mets a bit with Diaz. The flip side of that argument is, those guys very easily could have gotten hurt in similar ways during spring training, though it's very unlikely Edwin Diaz would be celebrating a huge win during a spring training game and therefore injure his knee. That probably wouldn't have happened, during spring training, but an injury could have happened. And I fully get that. So I'm hoping that we don't see anything else happen over the next couple of days, because that's a real true bummer. But there is no denying how much fun the event is and how much fun last night's game was. And for American-centric folks, how much fun the U.S. win was. That was a great, great baseball game that I think we'll be talking about for a very long time. And I guess my old argument would have been this. If you are given the option, and this is just in terms of interest of the World Baseball Classic only, if you were given the option before the season started of, hey, either your baseball team, whether it's the Cubs or the White Sox or whomever, wins the World Series, you can have that, or you can have the U.S. win the World Baseball Classic, I would say that it's probably 95% of listeners would say, I would rather have my team win the World Series. And I think that's where my argument in the past used to come from. That does not mean, though, that this isn't a fun event and overall a good thing for the game of baseball, which is trying to grow the sport, because it has lost interest over the years. There are a lot of people who think it's boring. There are a lot of people who think the games take too long and that there isn't enough action, which is, by the way, why we're seeing the pitch clock and why we are seeing these pace of play initiatives be introduced, despite the fact they are not always popular initiatives. I love the pitch clock, though. I'm glad it's here. It's one of my favorite things that's happened in baseball in like the last 5 years. In Queens, New York, Ben is with us on Hit and Run. Good morning, Ben.
Ranger, first time,
what's up,
long time. I've never talked with you, but I always used to love you doing the White Sox pre and post. Oh my God, your deft handling of some really, really severe personalities was always appointment radio. I loved it.
Severe personalities. What a great way to put it.
Yeah, no, it was fun. So listen, I'm an internationalist, always have been, grew up internationally. I was on a little league team. I wasn't able to make it, but they went to Williamsport. And if you're a baseball human, you have to look at all the baseball that's been played at the World Baseball Classic and you have to say, wow, this is a very, very high level. It's like Major League Baseball level, sometimes at a playoff level, sometimes at an all-star game level. So if there's the emotional part. For example, I was talking to Sean. Okay, I'm in a Cuban-American household. Tonight's game, it's more than baseball. You think the Boricua and the Dominican game was loud. You think last night was loud. Tonight's going to be off the hook, off the chain, for a number of reasons. But if you separate yourself from the emotion of it and you look at it as a baseball fan and as a baseball human, you have to see it. The other part of the flip side is that in Major League Baseball, every franchise got to see A ball players and double ball players play in an environment that they would never get to have during either spring training or during the entire minor league season. Okay, I can name Owen Casey. He's taking batting practice with Freddie Freeman. He's doing great. The White Sox players, for example, in the Netherlands, Houston Astros had two pitchers in A ball and double A. They got great experience. So if I'm looking at my Cubs, was my team, for example, Roenis Elias for Cuba has been pitching really well. The Cubs need a second lefty. He's on their roster. He has done enough in the World Baseball Classic for me, more than Kay, more than Merriweather, more than a couple other also-rans that they signed in the offseason. For the Cubs, I'm looking at his performance and what he's going to do tonight. And you can also look at Javier Assad, what he did with Mexico. He went through an all-star lineup. He got Mike Trout out once, and then he gave up a single. The other thing, too, if you're a White Sox fan and you like the White Sox-Cuba connection, out of all the Cuban players who said no, the two White Sox went down there who furthered that connection. So you've got that now coming for another 20 years. So anyway, hey, man, Ranger, love you. Keep it up. I'm glad you're on board with the World Baseball Classic. Hope to talk to you throughout the baseball year. Go Cubs.
Ben, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you for checking in from Queens. Again, everything you've said, I can't argue with any of it as it pertains to the Classic. What I will tell you is, if you're a holdout on this, and I'd really like to get the numbers on this. I'm curious to know. I think if you took a poll today, the numbers would be overwhelming in favor of the World Baseball Classic. And I'm talking about people who follow a Major League Baseball team, you know, who may have had felt like I felt in the past, where it's just kind of in the way of the Major League season. I think that because of the recency of last night, it would be overwhelming of people being in favor of the tournament, of the World Baseball Classic. I think so. But if you give it some time, maybe that would recede a little bit. However, I do believe history, 15, 20, 30, 40 years from now, I think this endeavor of creating this worldwide tournament, if it hasn't already been proven to be a success, which I think it has, I think it will definitely be firmly cemented as one of the really great sporting events that you get to see every few years. Just like the texter said a moment ago, Midway Jimbo, saying that this is great for the sport of baseball. I think that is absolutely true. No, hands down, no question. And the evidence, all the evidence you need, is watching the players involved and watching the countries and the fans in the stands and how much they're into it and the atmosphere. These games are loud. These games are really, really loud. They are like MLB playoff games where there's a constant buzz in the crowd the entire time. And you know what? It's even greater than a buzz. Like, it's not just that feeling of energy. It's more tangible energy than what you experience in a World Series, with the exception of, like, maybe a final out or something. But people are into it. They're chanting and they're singing and they're clapping and they're laughing and they're having a good time. And it's pretty much the entire game. And this is happening everywhere these games are being played. This is already a very successful event. And I do think that decades from now, we're going to look back at it as good of a tournament or important of a tournament as exists in any sports. A texter from a little bit ago says, how is this soccer players in the World Cup or basketball players and hockey players in the Olympics, how is that any different than now? And I would say it's really not, with the exception of the Soccer World Cup is much more well-established and is a much bigger deal on the world stage than the World Baseball Classic is right now. That doesn't mean that the World Baseball Classic can't build itself into being that down the road, but it isn't there right now. The World Cup is a massive, massive, massive deal, and it has been for my entire lifetime. Maybe the Americans aren't so good at it. Maybe that will change.
That's fair.
But, right? Right, Sean? Maybe it's going to get better. This last World Cup was a lot of fun. But we saw how we stack up against the rest of the world in terms of soccer. But the event itself, worldwide, there isn't anything bigger.
Yeah, I think what's going to help here is more moments like that Trey Turner home run. You know, I still remember the Andrew Jones play in 2017 where he stole that home run in that game. Marcus Stroman in that series. It's going to take a few moments like that, I think, to kind of win fans over, see those kind of moments, to think about those kind of things. They start becoming iconic. And you could think about that a little bit with, like, USA basketball. Like, obviously, you know, America has dominated that and for the most part in the Olympics. But at least with baseball, like, it's a more of a level competition. Like, obviously, USA has a team full of Hall of Fame and probably all-star players there. But it's not a sure thing that USA is going to win. And I think that, plus, like, some of the dramatic moments these atmospheres are going to create, it should hopefully just build this and hopefully the sport, right?
That's the intent. And for a sport that is really trying to gain more traction, because it's lost quite a bit of it in the United States. It's gained it elsewhere around the world. For a sport that's trying to do that, this event is wonderful. And I think we're going to be proven down the road that it has accomplished the goal we're talking about. What you said about this being or maybe it was a texter who said this, about this being an event that the rest of the world is watching and they are into it. And, you know, you can look at basketball and the Dream Team. I will use 1992, that first Dream Team. We were all really into it when that happened, but there was a reason for it. It was a novelty. We had never before seen the best basketball players in the country, guys like Michael Jordan, go up against the rest of the world. And from my perspective, it was just the novelty. Let's see how much we can dominate the rest of the world because we know we're great at basketball. But I'll be honest, after the second Dream Team, I've lost interest. I don't really care about American basketball in the Olympics. I just don't. There was a novelty that first time because you got to see how we stacked up against the rest of the world, but now I'm not really into it like I used to be. I'm just flat not. This text message from a 773 says, with all due respect, I'm on a text string with five other huge baseball fans, probably 100 texts shared yesterday. None were about the World Baseball Classic. We're all watching NCAA hoops. Not one of us is watching the WBC. I think there's a lot of truth to that, too. I was watching the NCAA tournament first, and I was following along, saw some tweets about the game, the U.S. game, and I flipped it over. And then I decided to pay attention to it a little bit closer. But I was NCAA tournament first because that, to me, is an event that I have always loved and I have always cared about, and it's hard for something else to replace it. Because to me, there is nothing in sports like the first 4 days of the NCAA tournament. I love it. And I think most people do as well. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. When we come back on The Score in a moment, we'll talk to Lamond Pope, who covers the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk to him next on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on the...
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Score. So there's an extensive closing experience on the roster outside of Hendricks. At least to start the season, who do you envision taking over the closer role?
I'm not going to have a closer role.
So more just kind of like by committee then?
It's going to be leveraging it out. We're not going to have a designated closer.
All right.
And I got to look at that statement. I think we might have a guy or two with experience at the back end there. I got to look at that.
That's White Sox manager Pedro Grifol talking about his closer situation with Liam Hendricks battling illness. and what the Sox are going to be dealing with, at least to begin the season at the back end of the bullpen. Chris Ronji, your host on Hit and Run today, in for Matt Spiegel. It is good to have you along for the ride today. And we are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Again, we will visit with Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider. That's happening this hour. Eric Hosmer will join us next hour. So will Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio. We go back to the guest line right now, brought to you by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and Lamond Pope, who covers the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune, joins us now. You can follow Lamond on Twitter at Lamond Pope. What is happening, my friend? How are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm doing well. How about you?
You know what? I could not be any better if you dropped a bag with $1 million in it and put it in my lap.
Wow.
It's that good. All right, so let me ask you about the World Baseball Classic. I'm people who cover baseball are paying attention to this. There's a lot of sports going on right now with the NCAA tournament, but then you've got this event. What is your level of interest in the WBC?
I mean, I've been locked in. You know, I've been the person that's stayed up late to watch Cuba for a few innings to see how Luis Robert Jr. and Yoan Moncada are doing. And, you know, I actually had the chance to cover two of the games here in Phoenix. I was at Monday's game with Lance Lynn making the start and Tim having an outstanding game. And I was at the first game as well against Great Britain. And so U.S. Great Britain game. And so having the chance to be in the ballpark for a couple of those games, caught the tail end of Great Britain's win on Monday as well. And so, and then last night, I mean, you know, I was, I had the tournament games on one computer, and I had initially had the WBC on one of the computers, but then I switched that over to the main, and I was actually on driving, and I was able to catch Mike's call on the Grand Slam. And so even when I was in my car, I was locked on in into the WBC. And so it's been really good drama. You know, talking to Eloy Jimenez when he got on back, a couple days ago, you know, he said that the Puerto Rico game was one of the best games that he's ever been involved with, as far as just the environment was concerned, the atmosphere in the ballpark. You know, he said he obviously would have liked a better result, but he just said that the just being in that environment, being in that ballpark, being among that atmosphere was one of the best experiences that he has had as a ball player.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying how much these players care about it, and that includes the American players, because the conventional thought has been they don't care about it as much as the rest of the world does, because they're getting ready for a season, and meanwhile you have other countries who are trying to prove that they are as good at baseball and should be paid attention to, like U.S. baseball should be paid attention to. But it's, I mean, Lamond, it's clear these guys care too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, take Tim Anderson, for example, right? Moving on over to playing second base for the first time ever, and you know, making that sort of, because they wanted to make sure they had his bat in the lineup. Just the reaction from the bench and waiting for Trey Turner to reach home plate. I mean, that show of emotion was all that you needed to tell, just so see how much these players care about it. You know, there's a lot of talk leading on into it. Well, you know, you got Mike Trout now. You know, he was able to bring along so many of these other superstars, and that sort of added a little bit of interest and a little bit of excitement for Team USA. But to actually see the reaction of all these guys' faces after that Grand Slam shows all that you need to know about just how much the U.S. team cares about being involved and winning in this event.
So you do have a bunch of White Sox will be involved in the game tonight, the U.S.-Cuba game. Roberts there, obviously. Moncada is there. Lance Lynn on the team. Graveman, Anderson. I mean, there is a lot of White Sox interest as it pertains to the semifinal.
Yeah, you know, both with mostly with Moncada. You know, he struggled those first couple games. You know, I think maybe the fact that both him and Robert being the first time that they're allowing some major league players to participate for Cuba. And I think maybe the pressure of that might have been a little too, you know, might have gotten to them a little bit there in those first couple games. They lost those first two games, but I mean, Moncada just has been heating up. I mean, he's been one of the better players throughout the event over the last handful of games. And so it'll be really interesting to see how those matchups happen. It was fun in last night's game watching Jose Ruiz face off against Tim Anderson, striking him out. And so, the opportunity to see those teammates versus teammate situations. I remember asking Luis about it going on into it, how much sort of trash talking was going on among the guys. And Luis was like, well, we have so far to go before we can actually get to see one of the other teams. But, Eloy, though, he likes to talk. So Eloy was doing a lot of talking for everybody. But now we're going to get the chance to see all those guys on the field facing off against each other. And so that'll be a fun matchup tonight for sure.
Talking about getting ready for the regular season in Cactus League, Michael Kopech looking pretty good recently. And so, we had a caller earlier who asked this question, and I would imagine that this is a thing a lot of Sox fans are talking about. You've got a potentially really strong 1-2-3 in the rotation. What are we expecting from him this year?
Yeah, he's coming off that first full season, mostly full because they shut him down at the end of September, but making that transition back into the rotation, making 25 starts. I think it was an opportunity for him just to sort of see how to prepare for a full season, how to go about being ready every fifth day. Having now had this chance to see him for these first two starts during spring training. Yesterday he worked on his curveball. He said that he was able to get that pitch locked on in and over for strikes, and so that was a plus. It's also not only for him, but obviously for all these guys, a little bit of an adjustment with the pitch clock, and so that's one thing that he's sort of been dealing with, making sure that he has a good rhythm with it. He's been saying that he's been going a little too fast when it comes to getting set and delivering his pitches, and so it's, and one of those things, one of the issues with that can possibly be fatigue, right? And so he wants to make sure that he has a good rhythm, against a good pace, and that he has enough, that he doesn't sort of wear himself out from that perspective of trying to rush too much. But the potential with Michael is the potential that it has been, throughout his entire career. If he can remain healthy, he is someone that can be a big boost to that rotation. I mean, overall, this rotation is, probably the strength of this ball club from a perspective of obviously having someone like Dylan Cease finishing as a runner-up in the Cy Young Award voting, Lance Lynn, former top five AL Cy Young person, and same with Lucas Giolito, hoping to bounce on back after kind of a disappointing season last year, and then you add in Mike Clevinger as well, and so you have five guys that have the potential that can kind of lead a ball club if the bats aren't going well. And so Michael, he has all the potential in the world, and has, and he's going to hopefully, for his sake, be able to grow off of what he was able to do last season.
Talking with Lamond Pope, who covers the White Sox for the Tribune. He's here on Hit and Run. So as it pertains to the back end of the bullpen and the absence of Hendricks, who is battling cancer now, and we heard from Pedro Grifol right off the top of the segment that they don't have a closer, that right now they don't have one. How exactly do you think it's going to play out, though, in the initial weeks?
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a situation where they're just going to be sort of be by committee, whoever sort of matches up best on that particular day. One thing that Pedro was saying was that, everybody's going to be available day one in Houston. And then, whoever they use that first day, they might not be available for day two. And that's when you sort of get into that rotation of figuring out who's going to be up, who's going to be down for that particular day. Kendall Graveman has experience closing. He did it a little bit in Seattle. I think he had six saves last year for the Sox as well. Joe Kelly has had some experience in that as well. Ronaldo Lopez is a guy that both Pedro and Ethan have spoken very highly of. I remember in November, Ethan was saying that Ronaldo has the makeup and the stuff to be a ninth inning type of guy. And so that, I wouldn't be surprised if Ronaldo was the guy that got the ball a few times in those ninth inning situations. And then again, with matchups, if it's a couple lefties you have coming up, you might go with Aaron Bummer as well. And so you have the options, but until Liam is back, you know, Liam is the guy that they have set as that closer situation, but without him, it's going to sort of be a little bit of a rotation by committee. And so that'll be really interesting to see how that works on out, because you know, Chris, that having that lockdown ninth inning guy is so crucial. And when you're sort of rotating guys on end, that could lead to some sort of problems with guys not having that sort of defined role. And so that'll be one thing to really watch here in early April for the White Sox.
What is a realistic timeline for Hendricks?
Yeah, we're going to get a little bit of an update probably by right around opening day. He had been doing some throwing. You know, we've seen him around camp here in Glendale. But we might actually have the chance here in the next week or so to have an opportunity to chat with him and see how he's doing, see how he's feeling, and just sort of get a little bit of an update from that standpoint. But the White Sox have said overall that they're going to wait until right around opening day to give us an update on his playing status. And so we're all waiting and seeing. It's been nice to see him around camp. It's been nice, honestly, it was surprising just to see just how much baseball activity that he's been able to do. And so the next step remains to be seen from that standpoint.
And real quick, Andrew Vaughn, the back issue with him, nothing serious?
That's what it sounds like. You know, Pedro was saying that they wanted to just err on the side of caution, and that, you know, if we ask Andrew, and hopefully we'll have the chance to ask him today, if he needed to play, that he could be in the lineup. But they just want to give him a few days of rest. They've done this a little bit in camp. Romy had some little aches and pains, and so they sat him down for a little bit. Hanser, Alberto gave him a little bit of a rest as well, and so. So hopefully we'll see, because obviously making that transition back to first base without moving on from without Abreu not there, the thought process with Andrew, you know, playing the outfield the last couple of years was now moving him back to first base, he'd be able to kind of get off his feet a little bit more, you know, not as much movement around, and so that he would be able to kind of, you know, make him a little stronger throughout the entire season. And so a little bit of a hiccup right now, and like I said, hopefully we'll have the chance to talk to Andrew a little bit later on today and get his take on how this all popped on up and what the road to recovery is as well.
Lamon Pope, appreciate it. Good to talk to you again. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Chris. Anytime.
That is Lamon Pope, covers the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune, joining us here on 670 The Score. How about some prospect talk? Kylie McDaniel, baseball insider for ESPN, joins us next. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
But now it'll be Oscar Colas. Here's the 1-1. Colas hits it a mile in the air down the right field line. That will stay fair, and that will go over the bullpen, a home run. So Colas off the bench goes deep against Drew Carlton, and once again it's a one-run game. 6-5 Padres here in the ninth.
Oscar Colas showing off why he's the number two prospect in this organization, going big fly.
Colas with the home run yesterday. Chris Ranji on The Score. It is Hit and Run with you until noon today, Central Time. It is good to have you along for the ride. We'll be talking with Eric Hosmer in the next hour. Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio will be joining us as well. But we go back to the guest line now, which is brought to you by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Kylie McDaniel covers baseball for ESPN, a baseball insider there. You can follow him on Twitter at Kylie McD, and he joins us this morning on The Score. What's going on, Kylie? How are you?
Not too much. When Mike Farron comes on, tell him I said something mean about him. He'll get a good kick out of that.
Well, let's workshop something. Let's workshop something really mean. So let me know what you think about before the end of the interview.
Yeah, I'll let it stew.
Okay. So, Kylie, I mean, you heard from Kolas there, who's getting an opportunity here, really with the World Baseball Classic going on, and has been really impressive. I know it's difficult to project these things, but as you look at him, what are you projecting?
Yeah, he was one of those guys, along with Anthony Volpe with the Yankees, Jordan Walker with the Cardinals, that are, you know, top-tier prospects, top, you know, 100 or so in the game, that if the sort of way is cleared and or they have a very strong spring training, could break camp with the big team. Andrew Painter was another one of those, the starting pitcher with the Phillies. And so far, Volpe is asserting himself. Jordan Walker is asserting himself. Oscar Colas is asserting himself. If Painter didn't get an elbow injury, it looked like all four of them might break with the big team or have a real chance to, where they're, you know, making it a difficult decision. And 4 or 5 years ago, before the rules had changed about, you know, getting draft picks, if somebody is up on opening day, is a top 100 prospect, and gets a rookie of the year win, teams would just leave these guys down for 2 weeks, get the year of control, and then call them up. Or if they weren't quite ready, leave them down for a month or two and avoid Super 2 arbitration, then, you know, get another year at the league minimum. Now the incentives are, if they're going to be up in the first month, just call them up immediately. There's no reason not to. And then also, again, these guys, with Colas included, are really asserting themselves as maybe being the best option anyway. So I think he is at the top of that list of the guy that, you know, the concerns are basically he's a power and patience corner guy, a big dude, not a ton of spin defense is being offered. If there's any margin for, there's not a lot of margin for error in projecting the bat. And so if he's going to strike out 30% of the time, he's got to really hit for power. That's sort of where the concern is. But that concern is getting smaller by the day, even though spring training performances, you can't take them as big league level, but he's making you consider that. Is it him? Is it Jake Berger? Is it Gavin Sheets? You're sort of walking through all these possibilities and you're like, hey, if this guy's who we think this guy can be, he'll be able to handle this. So why don't we just throw him in the deep end and see what happens?
And he's going to be 25 in September. So I know, you know, you say 25 years old and you think, well, that's really young. But in baseball terms, most guys, they're trying to get to the big leagues before that. So how much is that coloring their decision?
Well, yeah, he was one of those guys that was, I thought it was sort of foolhardy, but he was compared to Ohtani when he was like 20-21 because he was playing in Japan as a Cuban national, was up to 95 on the mound, and then showing up to power at the plate. Now, that was sort of the extent of the Ohtani comparisons. He's not pitching in pro ball, and I don't think he was ever really that good, but he was a standout. And then he had, I think it was over 2 years where he didn't play in a professional game because he was in a dispute trying to get out of his contract in Japan. And then there was defecting, working out for teams, and then getting his contract approved, and then getting into the minors. So he's, you know, 24 and a half, we'll call it. But, like, in terms of reps, he was getting, you know, professional reps in Cuba and then just didn't get reps for a long time, got bigger, then cut the weight off. Like, there was a lot of stuff happening there, but not a lot of facing velocity. So the thought is, does he need a little more time to on-ramp back onto facing velocity? Or does he just need, again, to be thrown into the deep end and just assume that he'll pick up where he left off? And it's hard to say, but so far it's looking like it's a little more toward throw him in the deep end and let him make the adjustments. And he also may be one of those rare guys, Luis Robert was one of them also, where they're so physically talented, they can't be challenged in AAA. You have to challenge them at the big league level because they're just so much better than who they're facing that they can't make those like little adjustments to the strike zone and really tightening things up. Ronald Acuna was another example of this. He had to come up and struggle at the big leagues for, you know, a little bit, a month, month and a half, and only there could he figure it out, whereas at AAA it wasn't challenging him enough. We don't know if that's the situation with Kolas, but it could be. And I think those are the sorts of conversations the White Sox are walking through with all these various scenarios of, well, do you leave him down for a month? Well, what if he demolishes it and then he comes up and he's not good and we got to send him back down? Is that going to help him or hurt him? Do we need to just send him down no matter what to make sure that he can have that, you know, that platform of performing in AAA to make him have a little more confidence if things don't go his way? Like, these are the sorts of things they're talking through. Is he ready to face big league pitching? I think he is. It's just, how do you want the next 5 years to go, and how will the next couple of months dictate that?
Is there anybody else that we need to pay attention to in terms of maybe getting a call sooner than later?
That's a tougher one. There's a lot of, when you talk about, you know, prospects, there's a lot of relievers that are technically prospects, but I think it's just a lot of guys that are age 23 to 25 that could sort of fill in as spot starters, relievers, that kind of thing. But when you're talking about, I think the people that are the players that people are excited about, the sort of top prospects that have a chance to really impact things, the two guys to point to would be Brian Ramos, a third baseman, finished the year in AA, and Colson Montgomery, who I have as, I think, one of the top 20 prospects in baseball. I think Colson Montgomery, who was the first-round pick 2 years ago out of an Indiana high school, was also a Division I point guard recruit, might be able to play shortstop in the big leagues, is like 6'3", 6'4", with potential for 25 homers. Like, obviously, a lot of stuff to like there. He's another guy that I think, similar to Colas, you kind of wonder if he's the guy that you think he is, if all the tools sort of line up and he becomes that, he's going to be in the big league like at the end of this year. If you're being more reasonable, most players in the big leagues that are good needed almost a year per level. So you want to take it a little slower with him. He's mostly an A-ball last year. But I think Colson Montgomery is the one to really keep an eye on, because he could be that special guy that just shoots through the minors and sort of asserts himself as, whether it's second base, shortstop, third base, or you just find a spot to put him in the lineup, he has a chance to be an impact guy. And there's not that many guys that could like make an all-star team that are in this system, but you got him and then Brian Ramos, who's maybe a tier below him in terms of talent. Those are the two guys to keep an eye on. And with a pretty good infield already, there's not like a short route to that, but you could see, you know, Elvis Andrews could be out at the end of the year, and then Colson Montgomery steps right in. Like, there's a path where Colas and Montgomery could be two key parts of that lineup by the end of the season.
Meanwhile, for the Cubs, and we are talking to Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider, here on Hit and Run. Pete Crow Armstrong is a guy that everybody is talking about, and he's still very young. You know, he's 20 years old right now. I think his 21st birthday is coming up in a week, or maybe a little bit less than a week. So you're talking about a player who is really, really young, but a lefty bat, throws left. That's the kind of guy that people want to see in the big leagues. It doesn't look like it's going to be, I can't imagine it's going to be anytime soon, but just how soon do you think we might see him?
He's another guy that's on that timetable with Montgomery. I would imagine Armstrong will start the year in AA, maybe high A, and then goes to AA by midseason. And sort of know anything with like top end prospects. Pete Armstrong has been a guy since like a freshman year in high school. He was committed to Vanderbilt at one of the big high schools. The high school produced Lucas Giolito and Max Fried and Jack Solari in Southern California. So he's been on the radar for a really long time. When you have that kind of guy that's that advanced, his like selling point since he was like 14 is he can really hit, he can really run, he can really play center field defense. And then the question was how much power, how is that, you know, going to look at the big league level? He made a lot of improvements last year. And so if he is that Colson Montgomery, that Oscar Colas, Jordan Walker, Andy Painter, all these guys that are making that run to the big leagues, there's a handful of them every year that go faster than you think they'll go. He has a chance to be that. And because he has that defense and speed and contact, it sets a very high floor where if you're looking for a guy that could even just, like when I worked for the Braves, we had Dansby Swanson came up and it was like, can this guy catch the ball and put it in play? Yeah, well, he's our best defensive, you know, option that you don't have to add to the 40-man roster, and you start talking yourself into it because it's difficult for him to not succeed at that basic level of, is he our best option? Is he better than that quad A guy we have sitting at AAA? So that's going to be the conversation with him. And his one sort of weakness in his game is he sort of swings a little too much, chases a little bit out of the zone. If he can tighten that up a little bit, he might be that guy that starts the year in AA, is asserting himself as a big league option by the middle of the season. Like, that's how quickly it could go because of the type of player he is. But it also could be spend the entire year AA and we have the same conversation next year, and it's more, you know, middle of the season next year. That's kind of like the timetable he's on.
It kind of looks like Hayden Wisniewski is going to be in the Cubs rotation unless something happens in the next couple of weeks. The feeling is that he'll be the fifth starter for the Cubs, and he's already got a little bit of experience in the big leagues as it is. What's your assessment of him?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. There's been a number of these. Ken Waldachuk, who was the sort of headliner in the trade with Oakland that the Yankees made, he was a 6th-round pick out of St. Mary's, the sort of funky lefty. Wisniewski out of a mid-major college in Texas, was also a 6th-round pick by the Yankees. They have made a point of finding these sorts of guys in those rounds and then trading them if they don't think that, the Yankees don't think that he is like a frontline chance to be a real difference maker, to upgrade the team in the short term. Wisniewski came over in the Scott Efros trade. So, you know, great find from the Cubs, the fringe top 100 prospect for a, you know, low slot reliever that is more of a luxury to have at the big league level. Wisniewski is a guy where I don't know if there's a plus pitch other than his slider. So you kind of wonder, is this a multiple inning, different sorts of roles kind of guy? Is it a definite starter? But he can really command a plus slider, and he throws hard enough that it's probably plays as an average fastball. But it's sort of more than the sum of its parts. He's coming at you from, you know, lower angle, and it's a, you know, tricky approach angle to the plate. Seems like he's a guy that if he can show that this year, that he can go out and take the ball and throw you four, five, maybe six innings as a rookie, that he'll be able to be one of those rotation stalwarts for the next 5-6 years. And if things don't work out, then it's a really good 7th-8th inning reliever, spot starter, multi-inning guy. That's sort of the range of possibilities, anywhere from, you know, 3rd-4th starter to really good useful reliever, which again is, you know, kind of what Efros was in the first place. You know, I think it goes back to what the Yankees have been good at, is getting those sorts of players and dealing them. If you look at Pico Armstrong, he was for a rental of Javier Baez. So that, like, kind of multi-year, maybe 2-year span where the Cubs were trying to collect prospects and sort of build back up. Obviously not fun for the fans to watch that. These are the kinds of guys you end up running into if you're kind of proactively looking for situations to turn big leaguers, especially on short contracts, into guys that could impact the big league team. You could be getting 6.5 years, maybe an extension of Pico Armstrong and Hayden Wesneski. This is the kind of thing, if you do it right, these are the kinds of guys you end up with.
What is the, as you look at both teams here in town, what is the health of the minor league system for both of them compared to the rest of MLB?
So the White Sox, I think, have been similar to teams like San Francisco and Washington and Kansas City, where they've been, you know, mostly good in terms of competing at the big league level. But the farm system has been a couple top guys that you're not going to trade, that you're hoping can step into the rotation of the lineup, and then just not a ton of depth, whether it's not being top tier in terms of the draft and international, or you're doing a pretty good job, but you're creating those guys pretty proactively, like I mentioned the Yankees have been doing. And then you just hold on to that, you know, that Moncada, that Luis Robert, those kind of guys that you need to hold on to because they're going to be core pieces. That's what the White Sox are looking at right now. I have them in the bottom 10 of farm systems. But again, if you have guys that are graduating to the big league, like Atlanta has had, that's a bottom tier farm system, but it's like doing what it's supposed to be doing. It doesn't really matter if you have Spencer Strider and Michael Harris and these guys get into the big leagues. They don't count as technically in the system. You get 23-year-old big leaguers. So the White Sox, I look at as that sort of team, where what they're trying to do, they'd love to have a top tier farm system, but what they're doing is probably always going to be in the bottom 10 as they're picking toward the back of the first round, calling guys up aggressively, trading to upgrade the team, that sort of thing. The Cubs are doing a different sort of thing, which is they've had a couple years where they're trying to accumulate young players. And so they are not necessarily trading them out. They are trading them in, which is something that a lot of smaller market teams like Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, Cleveland have been doing. Obviously, the Cubs have the opportunity to spend a bunch of money. They went and signed Suzuki, Stroman, Taillon, these guys to big money contracts while doing this. So that's like a somewhat unique approach to things. But I think their thought is, if we continue to beef up the big league team while also still accumulating on the minor league side, then all at once they're all going to show up and we're going to have a contender at a number that doesn't have to be the Mets, the Dodgers, that sort of spend, although we could get close to it. And right now I think you're looking at a system that is, I have them 10th right now, so they're sort of in the discussion for being in the top 10, and you have guys like Crow Armstrong, Jordan Wicks, Wesneski, Brandon Davis, Canario, Ben Brown, Killian, guys that are nervous, guys that are close to the big league level are ready to contribute. This isn't a system that is full of teenagers at low A and rookie ball that you're hoping turn out. That's kind of what it was 2 years ago when they traded Darvish and all those guys. Now it's a system where guys are about to graduate to the big leagues, and you might be able to turn that switch and really start to compete as these guys are filling spots at the league minimum, which gives you a little more bang for your buck on free agency. You don't have to sign five guys, you're signing one or two guys with the same amount of money.
Kylie McDaniel, appreciate your time today. Can't wait to say something mean to Mike Farron for you.
Thank you. I don't know. Call him short. I don't know. Make fun of his facial hair. You'll figure something out. You can
okay, yeah.
Push his buttons.
Oh, I got all kinds of insults for people. Yeah, this will be great. Thank you.
There's going to be a long pause when you say my name, too. He's not going to love it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Kylie. That's Kylie McDaniel, baseball insider for ESPN. Visiting with us on Hit and Run today. You can follow him on Twitter at Kylie McD. Speaking of Mike Farron, we'll visit with him next. He's with MLB Network Radio, and he'll be with us in a moment on The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Again, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Chris. Anytime.
That is Lamond Pope, covers the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune, joining us here on 670 The Score. How about some prospect talk? Kylie McDaniel, baseball insider for ESPN, joins us next. I'm Chris Ranji on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
But now it'll be Oscar Colas. Here's the 1-1. Colas hits it a mile in the air down the right field line. That will stay fair, and that will go over the bullpen, a home run. So Colas off the bench goes deep against Drew Carlton, and once again it's a one-run game. 6-5 Padres here in the ninth.
Oscar Colas showing off why he's the number two prospect in his organization, going big fly.
Colas with the home run yesterday. Chris Ranji on The Score. It is Hit and Run with you until noon today, Central Time. It is good to have you along for the ride. We'll be talking with Eric Hosmer in the next hour. Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio will be joining us as well. But we go back to the guest line now, which is brought to you by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Kylie McDaniel covers baseball for ESPN, a baseball insider there. You can follow him on Twitter at Kylie McD, and he joins us this morning on The Score. What's going on, Kylie? How are you?
Not too much. When Mike Farron comes on, tell him I said something mean about him. He'll get a good kick out of that.
Well, let's workshop something. Let's workshop something really mean. So let me know what you think about before the end of the interview.
Yeah, I'll let it stew.
Okay. So, Kylie, you heard from Colas there, who's getting an opportunity here, really with the World Baseball Classic going on, and has been really impressive. I know it's difficult to project these things, but as you look at him, what are you projecting?
Yeah, he was one of those guys, along with Anthony Volpe with the Yankees, Jordan Walker with the Cardinals, that are, you know, top-tier prospects, top, you know, 100 or so in the game, that if the sort of way is cleared and or they have a very strong spring training, could break camp with the big game. Andrew Painter was another one of those, the starting pitcher with the Phillies. And so far, Volpe is asserting himself. Jordan Walker is asserting himself. Oscar Colas is asserting himself. If Painter didn't get an elbow injury, it looked like all four of them might break with the big team or have a real chance to, where they're, you know, making it a difficult decision. And 4 or 5 years ago, before the rules had changed about, you know, getting draft picks, if somebody is up on opening day, is a top 100 prospect, and gets a rookie of the year win, teams would just leave these guys down for 2 weeks, get the extra year of control, and then call them up. Or if they weren't quite ready, leave them down for a month or two and avoid Super 2 arbitration, then, you know, get another year at the league minimum. Now the incentives are, if they're going to be up in the first month, just call them up immediately. There's no reason not to. And then also, again, these guys, with Colas included, are really asserting themselves as maybe being the best option anyway. So I think he is at the top of that list of the guy that, you know, the concerns are basically he's a power and patience corner guy, a big dude, not a ton of defense. defense is being offered, if there's any margin for, there's not a lot of margin for error in projecting the bat. And so if he's going to strike out 30% of the time, he's got to really hit for power. That's sort of where the concern is. But that concern is getting smaller by the day, even though spring training performances, you can't, you know, you can't take them as big league level, but he's making you consider that. Is it him? Is it Jake Berger? Is it Gavin Sheets? You're sort of walking through all these possibilities and you're like, hey, if this guy's who we think this guy can be, he'll be able to handle this. So why don't we just throw him in the deep end and see what happens?
And he's going to be 25 in September. So I know, you know, you say 25 years old and you think, well, that's really young. But in baseball terms, they're most guys, they're trying to get to the big leagues before that. So how much is that coloring their decision?
Well, yeah, he was one of those guys that was, I thought it was sort of foolhardy, but he was compared to Ohtani when he was like 2021 because he was playing in Japan as a Cuban national, was up to 95 on the mound, and then showing up to power at the plate. Now, that was sort of the extent of the Ohtani comparisons. He's not pitching a pro ball, and I don't think he was ever really that good, but he was a standout. And then he had, I think it was over 2 years where he didn't play in a professional game because he was in a dispute trying to get out of his contract in Japan. And then there was defecting, working out for teams, and then getting his contract approved, and then getting into the minors. So he's, you know, 24 and a half, we'll call it. But, like, in terms of reps, he was getting, you know, professional reps in Cuba and then just didn't get reps for a long time, got bigger, then cut the weight off. Like, there was a lot of stuff happening there, but not a lot of facing velocity. So the thought is, does he need a little more time to on-ramp back onto facing velocity? Or does he just need, again, to be thrown into the deep end and just assume that he'll pick up where he left off? And it's hard to say, but so far it's looking like it's a little more toward throw him in the deep end and let him make the adjustments. And he also may be one of those rare guys, Luis Robert was one of them also, where they're so physically talented, they can't be challenged in AAA. You have to challenge them at the big league level because they're just so much better than who they're facing that they can't make those like little adjustments to the strike zone and really tightening things up. Ronald Acuna was another example of this. He had to come up and struggle at the big leagues for, you know, a little bit, a month and a half, and only there could he figure it out, whereas at AAA it wasn't challenging him enough. We don't know if that's the situation with Colas, but it could be. And I think those are the sorts of conversations the White Sox are walking through with all these various scenarios of, well, do you leave him down for a month? Well, what if he demolishes it and then he comes up and he's not good and we got to send him back down? Is that going to help him or hurt him? Do we need to just send him down no matter what to make sure that he can have that, you know, that platform of performing in AAA to make him have a little more confidence if things don't go his way? Like, these are the sorts of things they're talking through. Is he ready to face big league pitching? I think he is. It's just, how do you want the next 5 years to go, and how will the next couple of months dictate that?
Is there anybody else that we need to pay attention to in terms of maybe getting a call sooner than later?
That's a tougher one. There's a lot of, when you talk about, you know, prospects, there's a lot of relievers that are technically prospects, but I think it's just a lot of guys that are age 23 to 25 that could sort of fill in as spot starters, relievers, that kind of thing. But when you're talking about, I think the people that are, the players that people are excited about, the sort of top prospects that have a chance to really impact things, the two guys to point to would be Brian Ramos, a third baseman, finished the year in AA, and Colson Montgomery, who I have as, I think, one of the top 20 prospects in baseball. I think Colson Montgomery, who was the first-round pick 2 years ago out of an Indiana high school, was also a Division I point guard recruit, might be able to play shortstop in the big leagues, is like 6'3", 6'4", with potential for 25 homers. Like, obviously a lot of stuff to like there. He's another guy that I think, similar to Colas, you kind of wonder if he's the guy that you think he is, if all the tools sort of line up and he becomes that, he's going to be in the big league like at the end of this year. If you're being more reasonable, most players in the big leagues that are good needed almost a year per level. So you want to take it a little slower with him. He's mostly an A-ball last year. But I think Colson Montgomery is the one to really keep an eye on because he could be that special guy that just shoots through the minors and sort of asserts himself as, whether it's second base, shortstop, third base, or you just find a spot to put him in the lineup, he has a chance to be an impact guy. And there's not that many guys that could like make an all-star team that are in this system, but you got him and then Brian Ramos, who's maybe a tier below him in terms of talent. Those are the two guys to keep an eye on. And with a pretty good infield already, there's not like a short route to that, but you could see, you know, Elvis Andrews could be out at the end of the year and then Colson Montgomery steps right in. Like, there's a path where Colas and Montgomery could be two key parts of that lineup by the end of the season.
Meanwhile, for the Cubs, and we are talking to Kylie McDaniel, ESPN Baseball Insider, here on Hit and Run. Pete Crow Armstrong is a guy that everybody is talking about, and he's still very young. Yeah, he's 20 years old right now. I think his 21st birthday is coming up in a week or maybe a little bit less than a week. So you're talking about a player who is really, really young, but a lefty bat, throws left. That's the kind of guy that people want to see in the big leagues. It doesn't look like it's going to be, I can't imagine it's going to be anytime soon, but just how soon do you think we might see him?
He's another guy that's on that timetable with Montgomery. I would imagine Armstrong will start the year in double A, maybe high A, and then goes to double A by midseason. And sort of know anything with like top end prospects. Peter Armstrong has been a guy since like a freshman year in high school. He was committed to Vanderbilt at one of the big high schools. The high school produced Lucas Giolito and Max Fried and Jack Flaherty in Southern California. So he's been on the radar for a really long time. When you have that kind of guy that's that advanced, his like selling point since he was like 14 is he can really hit, he can really run, he can really play center field defense. And then the question was how much power, how is that, you know, going to look at the big league level? He made a lot of improvements last year. And so if he is that Colson Montgomery, that Oscar Colas, Jordan Walker, Andy Painter, all these guys that are making that run to the big leagues, there's a handful of them every year that go faster than you think they'll go. He has a chance to be that. And because he has that defense and speed and contact, it sets a very high floor where if you're looking for a guy that could even just when I worked for the Braves, we had Dansby Swanson came up and it was like, can this guy catch the ball and put it in play? Yeah, well, he's our best defensive, you know, option that you don't have to add to the 40-man roster, and you start talking yourself into it because it's difficult for him to not succeed at that basic level of, is he our best option? Is he better than that quad A guy we have sitting at AAA? So that's going to be the conversation with him. And his one sort of weakness in his game is he sort of swings a little too much, chases a little bit out of the zone. If he can tighten that up a little bit, he might be that guy that starts the year in double A, is asserting himself as a big league option by the middle of the season. Like, that's how quickly it could go because of the type of player he is. But it also could be spend the entire year double A and we have the same conversation next year. And it's more, you know, middle of the season next year. That's kind of like the timetable he's on.
It kind of looks like Hayden Wisniewski is going to be in the Cubs rotation unless something happens in the next couple of weeks. The feeling is that he'll be the fifth starter for the Cubs, and he's already got a little bit of experience in the big leagues as it is. What's your assessment of him?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. There's been a number of these. Ken Waldachuk, who was the sort of headliner in the in trade with Oakland that the Yankees made, he was a sixth-round pick out of St. Mary's, the sort of funky lefty. Wisniewski out of a mid-major college in Texas, was also a sixth-round pick by the Yankees. They have made a point of finding these sorts of guys in those rounds and then trading them if they don't think that, the Yankees don't think that he is like a front-line chance to be a real difference maker, to upgrade the team in the short term. Wisniewski came over in the Scott Efros trade. Great find from the Cubs, the fringe top 100 prospect for a, you know, low slot reliever that is more of a luxury to have at the big league level. Wisniewski is a guy where I don't know if there's a plus pitch other than his slider. So you kind of wonder, is this a multiple inning, different sorts of roles kind of guy? Is it a definite starter? But he can really command a plus slider, and he throws hard enough that it's probably plays as an average fastball. But it's sort of more than the sum of its parts. He's coming at you from, you know, lower angle, and it's a, you know, tricky approach angle to the plate. Seems like he's a guy that if he can show that this year, that he can go out and take the ball and throw you four or five, maybe six innings as a rookie, that he'll be able to be one of those rotation stalwarts for the next 5-6 years. And if things don't work out, then it's a really good 7th-8th inning reliever, spot starter, multi-inning guy. That's sort of the range of possibilities, anywhere from, you know, 3rd-4th starter to really good useful reliever, which again is, you know, kind of what Efros was in the first place. You know, I think it goes back to what the Yankees have been good at, is getting those sorts of players and dealing them. If you look at Peter Armstrong, he was for a rental of Javier Baez. So that like kind of multi-year, maybe 2-year span where the Cubs were trying to collect prospects and sort of build back up. Obviously not fun for the fans to watch that. These are the kinds of guys you end up running into if you're kind of proactively looking for situations to turn big leaguers, especially on short contracts, into guys that could impact the big league team. You could be getting 6.5 years, maybe an extension of Peter Armstrong and Hayden Wisniewski. This is the kind of thing, if you do it right, these are the kinds of guys you end up with.
What is the, as you look at both teams here in town, what is the health of the minor league system for both of them compared to the rest of MLB?
So the White Sox, I think, have been similar to teams like San Francisco and Washington and Kansas City, where they've been, you know, mostly good in terms of competing at the big league level, but the farm system has been a couple top guys that you're not going to trade, that you're hoping can step into the rotation of the lineup, and then just not a ton of depth, whether it's not being top tier in terms of the draft and international, or you're doing a pretty good job, but you're trading those guys pretty proactively, like I mentioned the Yankees have been doing, and then you just hold on to that, you know, that Moncada, that Luis Robert, those kind of guys that you need to hold on to because they're going to be core pieces. That's what the White Sox are looking at right now. I have them in the bottom 10 of farm systems, but again, if you have guys that are graduating to the big league like Atlanta has had, that's a bottom tier farm system, but it's like doing what it's supposed to be doing. It doesn't really matter if you have Spencer Strider and Michael Harris and these guys get into the big leagues, they don't count as technically in the system. You get 23-year-old big leaguers. So the White Sox, I look at as that sort of team where what they're trying to do, they'd love to have a top tier farm system, but what they're doing is probably always going to be in the bottom 10 as they're picking toward the back of the first round, calling guys up aggressively, trading to upgrade the team, that sort of thing. The Cubs are doing a different sort of thing, which is they've had a couple years where they're trying to accumulate young players, and so they are not necessarily trading them out. They are trading them in, which is something that a lot of smaller market teams like Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, Cleveland have been doing. Obviously, the Cubs have the opportunity to spend a bunch of money. They went and signed Suzuki, Stroman, Taillon, these guys to big money contracts while doing this. So that's like a somewhat unique approach to things, but I think their thought is if we continue to beef up the big league team while also still accumulating on the minor league side, then all at once they're all going to show up and we're going to have a contender at a number that doesn't have to be the Mets, the Dodgers, that sort of spend, although we could get close to it. And right now I think you're looking at a system that is, I have them 10th right now, so they're sort of in the discussion for being in the top 10, and you have guys like Crow Armstrong, Jordan Wicks, Wisniewski, Brandon Davis, Canario, Ben Brown, Killian, guys that are nervous, guys that are close to the big league level are ready to contribute. This isn't a system that is full of teenagers at low A and rookie ball that you're hoping turn out. That's kind of what it was 2 years ago when they traded Darvish and all those guys. Now it's a system where guys are about to graduate to the big leagues, and you might be able to turn that switch and really start to compete as these guys are filling spots at the league minimum, which gives you a little more bang for your buck on free agency. You don't have to sign five guys. You're signing one or two guys with the same amount of money.
Kylie McDaniel, appreciate your time today. Can't wait to say something mean to Mike Farron for you.
Thank you. I don't know. Call him short. I don't know. Make fun of his facial hair. You'll figure something out. You can
okay, yeah.
Push his buttons.
Oh, I got all kinds of insults for people. Yeah, this will be great. Thank you.
There's going to be a long pause when you say my name, too. He's not going to love it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Kylie. That's Kylie McDaniel, baseball insider for ESPN. Visiting with us on Hit and Run today. You can follow him on Twitter at Kylie McD. Speaking of Mike Farron, we'll visit with him next. He's with MLB Network Radio, and he'll be with us in a moment on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.